From NPR Music, this is Out Latino. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garst.
Twenty years ago was the release of the Los Lobos album Kiko. And 20 years may seem like a long time, but 40 years is even longer. And this month, the band celebrates their 40-year anniversary. And in the studio, we have with us Luis Perez and Steve Berlin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Guys, welcome. 40 years is indeed a long time. Very quickly, I mean, what are some of the things that strike you as you guys come upon your 40th anniversary?
I'm thinking.
I can hear the gears turning.
You guys haven't been asked this yet?
It's always a little, you know, It's like, it doesn't seem like 40, so it always seems like it's a mistake at first, and you have to actually do the math and realize it has been that long.
We're a bunch of very, put one foot in front of the other kind of dudes.
You guys started off, well, maybe let's rephrase the question. You guys started off playing quinceañeras and weddings. Did you ever think that you would be this institution of Latin rock?
No. Of course, when we started, 5 years seemed like a long time when we hit that one. Then we had 10 years, and it seemed like an eternity. And then time just evaporated after that.
What's the secret? I mean, you hear about these bands that, like, implode after 3 years, or after, they'd go Guns N' Roses, And you guys have...
we got it out of the way real early.
Yeah, first 2 weeks it was just nonstop. It was like the dawn of Earth, and then everything was cool.
Yeah, my nose used to be straighter.
He always sleeps till the sun goes down. He never wakes till no one's around. He never stops, can't catch his breath. It's always there, scares him to death. Kiko and the lavender moon, not dreaming about green shoes, haircuts and cake. And then he wishes the world away, and then he kneels as if to pray. He dreams and dreams, Kiko and the lavender moon.
I do get to at this opportunity to say that I saw you guys it was either 1975 or 76, believe it or not, when I attended a Mecha student leadership conference at UC Davis when I was in high school in Northern California. And the lunchtime entertainment was this band called Los Lobos del Este de Los Angeles. And it was... I remember I went home and told my dad, I said, you're not going to believe this, but I saw a bunch of Chicano hippies playing mariachi.
It's all right.
It was long hair, there were ponytails, there were beards, and it was mariachi. You guys started out as a rock band, like a garage band, but how did you make that transition back into folkloric music like that?
First of all, we were friends before we were musicians. We all met in high school at James A. Garfield High in East L.A. I played in a band, and truly a garage band with David. I don't think we ever left the garage. Caesar was playing in this soul band that he had. I mean, just like horns, big band. Conrad had a band that was like a power trio in the truest sense, like Blue Cheer. And after we got out of high school. Like friends do, we just kind of hung out and saw each other, and the natural progression of things was to become musicians together, actually form a band. And that just kind of happened as a kind of just on a lark. We decided we were going to learn a couple songs, folkloric songs, to play for one of our mom's birthday for Mañanitas.
Nice.
And then at that point, we were just struck by how this music that played it as a kind of soundtrack to our lives growing up, it suddenly became so intriguing to us and demanding on our musicianship, because we didn't realize that this music was so intricate and so complicated. We were listening to everything that we can find from our parents' record collections and beyond. We started tracking down some of the instruments that we saw on the album covers from pawn shops, and then we had to figure out how to play them. Then, as I mentioned, Jasmine, just a minute ago, 5 years went by.
Well, that's interesting, because we often have this conversation about how initially you reject your parents. One of my favorite anecdotes from Felix is, you know, he wanted to listen to the Jackson 5 and all the R&B stations, and his mom would turn on the mariachi and ranchera, and then he would sneak over and turn the dial back to the R&B station. Yeah. Did you have, like, an initial rejection of that musical style?
I think I think we all did. Like, all the young people who were... you know, when my mom listened to ranchera music, she loved Miguel Aces Mejia and Lola Beltran, and she dragged my sister and I down to the Million Dollar Theater downtown. They played, they played movies, but they'd have variedades, and they had all these mariachis, and so yeah, that was going on all the time, and that old Admiral Bake-like radio that sat on the counter in the kitchen was always playing Mexican music. And I guess finally I got tall enough to reach the knob. And like everybody else, so like, you know, like, but, you know, I'm not speaking, I'm certainly not just Chicanos, the kids come from Mexican homes, but I think any ethnic group, you know, kids growing up, they reject that stuff. They want to homogenize, they want to be part of the larger scheme of things, and I certainly did. I started listening to rock and roll, and then somehow we all kind of found ourselves in the same place.
Well, did you bring anything from your mom's record collection?
I sure did. There's one of the, Miguel Aces Mejia, which was one of the the artists she particularly, she was crazy about him. We actually went to the Million Dollar to see him, and she went backstage to get his autograph, you know, the whole bit, and dragged us along.
Isn't that kind of like when your mom is like all dreamy-eyed about a guy, and you're just like, oh, this is uncomfortable. What's this song?
This song is a really terrific song. It's called La Noche y Tú. Miguel Aces Mejia, which is a classic, and this one intros with Conjunto Jarocho, and then it goes into this beautiful thing. It's just a wonderful song, and it certainly strikes a lot of memories from back home.
Well, here's La Noche y Tú, the night and you, Mexican romanticismo at its best.
I mean, listen to this, that arrangement, just incredible.
It has an almost bachata feel.
Yeah, well, that's the arpa and the jarana, it's the conjunto jarocho.
Yeah.
And then it goes into the arpa vieja, and it goes into the full-on Jalisco style.
You know, I recently just fell completely in love with Son Jarocho.
It's among young Chicanos, it's a big deal, especially, you know, I don't know where else, but in Los Angeles, it's huge.
luna, las estrellas y la noche son testigos de nuestra gran pasión. La noche, las estrellas y la luna me oyeron ofrecerte mi canción, mi amor. Y el corazón.
You know what's kind of crazy about Felix sharing some of his Chicano or older Mexican music is that I grew up in Argentina, and my grandmother, who's Argentine, used to sing some of these boleros and son jarochos, and I never thought that it was Mexican music. I just thought, oh, you know, maybe it's from Venezuela because she lived there for a long time, and she used to, like, belt out some of these songs. I mean, these were truly, like, international hits before there were international hits.
I never realized that ranchera music it had become so popular all over Latin America. And, you know, somebody like Miguel Lasez Mejia, who's, you know, the voz of Mexico, I guess he went by, and just incredible, the falsetto, and he was popular everywhere.
Steve, what year did you join the band?
Nobody knows.
You're very quiet over there.
It's sort of it's a loose 83, I think.
You were playing in a band called the Blasters at that time, and among other bands.
Yes, I was.
That was very hardcore rockabilly, almost punk style. And this was also at the same time when there was a lot of punk going on in Hollywood, and including some Chicano punk. But you came to the band from a different cultural background, different musical background. What did you think of the all of this mixture of culture that was going on with the band when you heard it?
I was fascinated. What was so cool about meeting and discovering Los Lobos was that, you know, by that stage, which would be 1980, let's say, I mean, we had sort of, there was a scene, and it seemed like we knew the four corners of our little universe. I mean, it sort of feels like, you know, like... Like there was this, you know, we had this very defined, you know, this band's here and this band's here, and then Los Lobos comes in and blows everything apart. Mm-hmm. You know, a band that was 15 miles from where we were, might have been, you know, 15 planets away, with this fully realized sound and all this beautiful cultural input and stuff. So for me, it was just like a sort of, you know, went from black and white to color.
Can we listen to one of your music picks?
Well, one of the interesting things, like not really being exposed to any Latino culture growing up, but where we connected initially was the sound of the Philly sound, you know, the Philly international sound. So I brought a record by a band called The Intruders, Cowboys to Girls, which is one of my favorite songs of all time.
Uh-oh. And everyone's freaking out in the studio.
It's just, you know, it was amazing to me, again, knowing nothing, that, you know, we started talking about R&B stuff, and like all these Philly bands were the biggest thing going in East LA. So I thought, wow, okay, these guys are cool.
Boys and girls, I remember when I used to play shoot 'em up, bang bang, baby. I remember when I chased the girls and beat 'em up. But I was young and didn't understand.
I didn't know what you brought. That's great. That's one of my favorites growing up.
This stuff always feels like Sunday morning to me.
Such a great concept for a song, too. Cowboys to Girls, man. I love the little Sonny Brown. It's just his voice. It just sounds like he's barely getting to every note.
Yeah, right. But you are young and you understand. Now you're a woman and I'm a man. And it's me that you're kissing. It is fun reminiscing. And our life is not the same. Oh, well, it's been real rain. You ain't fun. Oh, yes, you did. And I will
that also brings up the R&B element to Los Lobos, because that's just as prominent as the Mexican influence, and I've always felt that's why the band spoke to me so strongly, is that it's not only bilingual, it's bimusical, bicultural. Was it a conscious decision, like, if we're going to make this song sound like this, we're going to make this song sound like that? How did that hybrid come about?
You know, I guess on a certain level, when we started, like any band beginning, we sort of wore influences fairly upfront. So there was a little bit of that. But I think it really wasn't very long, at least into my tenure of the band, that we realized that the coolest part was the mixing. That, you know, the more we messed the colors around on the palette, the better it sounded. And I think Kiko, to a certain extent, was the first, there was a real breakthrough. We just really threw everything out the window and started with the entire toolbox in front of us. But, you know, early on there was a little bit of parochialism in terms of, you know, how he would treat a song. You know, we would try and stay within relatively narrow parameters, but we always put our own spin on it. I remember the first time we played, one of the times we played in Northern California, Chris Strachwitz from Arhuli Records, who was, you know, amazing musicologist and sort of discovered a bunch of stuff and brought a lot of stuff to, certainly to popular culture. He came up to us after the show and goes, "I love your music, but you play too damn fast. Everything's too damn fast. Slow down. It's too damn fast."
That's exactly how he talks, too. Early on, I think what struck me was one of the songs that you wrote that was about the Mexican immigrant experience, but it was an R&B tune. It was called A Matter of Time. Mm-hmm. And I think that we had, a while back, we had Juno Diaz on, and he was talking about how one song in particular, La Hoja en Blanco, was like the song for the Dominican immigrant experience. And for my money, I think A Matter of Time really hits that high watermark as well. Speak softly.
With The Matter of Time, I'll roll back just a little bit. We made that first EP, seven songs. Traditional songs. We did Richie Valens songs. There was a couple songs that we had written, and it became this, you know, talked about record, and became hugely written about. And then we got the deal with Warner Brothers to do a full album. And at that point, I think for David and I, we kind of felt that, well, we could write songs and just be this cool, you know, kind of cool to dance to kind of band, or we can write songs that actually kind of mean something to us personally. So I think we took the direction to in taking responsibility and wanting to talk about our own experiences growing up in East Los Angeles and looking at all the things that were around us. So we took this the story of somebody getting up in the morning and somewhere in Mexico and saying goodbye to his family as he makes his way across the border. So both the influence, musical influence of rhythm and blues, and, you know, Stevie Wonder and everything else, kind of made its way into telling the story of something that was very personal to us as a culture.
Don't worry about us here, we'll be alright, and we'll be there with you, just a matter of time, and we'll all be together, just a matter of time, a matter of time.
This reminds me that you guys have been in the news for speaking out against the Arizona immigration law. And that's something we talk about a lot on our show, about the role of artists. We've had artists who are very vocal on political issues on our show. We've had, you know, Calle 13, we've had Juno Diaz, we've had Gael Garcia Bernal, all artists who really pride themselves in talking about social and political issues. And, you know, there's always, I know people who say, look, in my free time, I don't want to think about this anymore. I know people who did do this, you know, crossing of the border, and in their free time, they don't want to think about that. What is the role of the artist? Is it to entertain and get your mind off of problems?
Yeah, I think for most artists, I think it happens at a very young age where you feel, you know, attracted to something. And it's really, I think it's just we're trying to express ourselves. And, you know, some people will do it in different ways. You know, I think the word artist I've always had a little bit of a problem with. Mm-hmm. To quote, like, Marcel Duchamp, it was like, you know, back when there were craftsmen, say, in the Renaissance, these, you know, they were craftsmen. And then things changed when the craftsman became the individual, when he became the artist. So, really, for me, it's you know, an artist's role has to come along with a certain degree of responsibility. And for us, being Chicanos and growing up and seeing all this stuff all around us, it was very important for us to include that in our music. And I'll still say this over and over and over again. You know, this band wouldn't be here. We wouldn't have Grammy Awards and we wouldn't have all these accolades and gold records if it wasn't for the sacrifices that our parents made.
Right.
To cross the border to bring a better life for their children. And maybe there's a certain degree of luck that happened with the Los Lobos success. I think some of it has to do because, you know, we got a little bit of talent. But a lot of it you got to kind of follow the trajectory. You have to kind of go back and see the chain of events that brought us here, and that's something that I can never forget. And it'll always, whenever I write songs, I have to go to that well of experience.
Felix and I, we get into this discussion sometimes in which, you know, Felix says, well, one of the things he was saying, referring to Los Lobos, is that, you know, it has to do with the context of Chicanos and the Bracero program and this whole history and. Mm. I think, Felix, your exact words were that now there's a different landscape and it's a little easier because multiculturalism is accepted and speaking Spanish is accepted. And I fired back that maybe it's even harder because you have states like Arizona and there's this really strong push to curb that culture. I mean, how has this context changed in which your music is received?
I think I would agree a little bit with both of you. there is this acceptance, but at the same time, you know, every step forward seems to be, there's something that you know, we're stepping backwards at the same time. Something like what's going on in Arizona, and is unfortunately becoming almost like a trend around the certain states around the U.S. I mean, this is horrific kind of stuff. I mean, like, where are we? Are we living in? Is this Jim Crow era again, or what? You know, it's just it's unbelievable that it can happen. You know, Chicanos fought for their own civil rights on the educational level, and certainly, you know, during the Vietnam era, when there was just a lot of Chicanos were put out in front. And we fought for that, and the changes were made. And then we go back. Then suddenly, okay. Then they're taking Chicano literature and studies out of the program just because it's un-American. Suddenly, people with the last name ends with a vowel are suspects. It's unbelievable what's going on today. So it's a little bit of both, I think.
But I think the illegitimacy and the moral corruptness of that viewpoint is being exposed. I mean, it seems horrific, and I agree with Louis completely that it's beyond belief. But to a certain extent, at least, it makes me feel a little bit better that it seems like it's like the dying cry of an age that's going away. I mean, that this all those laws are, you know, I mean, it can't be on any other level. It's just pure jingoism, and it's going to go away. I mean, you can't support it. It has no moral standing, no moral backbone. So I'd like to think that it's the end of that era.
Hmm. You know, Steve, when you, as a producer of many of the albums of the band, you know, it's your job to incorporate all that, you know, some of this, the songwriting, and into the sound of the band, you know, I'm always curious to know, what are some of your musical, what's in your musical DNA? And you brought a handful of songs. I want to play one of those songs right now. Which one do you want to play?
An artist named Damon Albarn, who I really admire, who's done, in his own way, similar stuff to what we've done, where he spent a good bit of time in Africa. He made an amazing record called Mali Music, which he sort of wandered around the country and captured musical moments, and then wrote amazingly beautiful pop songs around some of the stuff that he captured. And he's also the genius behind the Gorillaz, and then his main gig is he's the leader of a band called Blur. And one of the songs, I was just trying to pick a song that I liked and had affected me, and I chose a song from their last record that again kind of wipes me out every time I hear it. And you could hear in it, there's a bit of a kora. I believe that the solo is a African instrument called a kora, which is like a African harp. And there's a bunch of other strange noises on the record, and I think he's someone that sort of speaks our language, you know, a musical polyglot, and likes to, in a disruptive way, combine cultures and see what happens. So that's one. I brought that one.
So the name of the artist is?
It's Blur, and a song called Out of Time. I don't know what love will be.
dreaming now. Lord knows we never clear the clouds. And you've been so busy lately that you haven't found.
That was Out of Time by Blur, a pick from Steve Berlin of Los Lobos. Let's bring this back to your music and talk about the track Will the Wolf Survive, which is going back to 1984. It's a powerful example of what you guys do best. And by the way, one of my favorites, where did that track come from?
Dave and I were again, it was at that first record that we just said, you know, let's write about something that really means something to us. I saw this article about, you know, it has this wolf on the cover, and I saw the title, Where Will the Wolf Survive? You know, what still goes on, the, you know, helicopter shootings of wolves and wiping them out into near extinction. And I just thought this parallel between what we want to do to maintain our own cultural integrity, and again, unfortunately, we see that happening again. We folded the idea into this song, but it's more than just our own culture. I think there's something about the preservation of our own heritage and reminding ourselves and reminding others that we all came from somewhere else. You know, that America, what makes America strong and a wonderful place, it's a mixture of many cultures.
It's a great idea, and it's a great song to end the show with. Guys, thank you so much for dropping by. Congratulations on 40 years.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Remind our listeners that you can hear the song in its entirety, as well as the rest of the music that we've played on the show today, on our website at npr.org/altlatino.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, where we have conversations every day, all week long, about cultural issues, not just music, and on Twitter.
Yeah, and you can hear every song we've played on this show and every show on our 24-hour stream, Alt Latino Radio.
Special thanks to our producer, Jessica Goldstein.
I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garst.
This has been Alt Latino. But he'll find his way.